Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everybody, Seth Meyers here. Thanks for listening to another episode of Seth Off Air, where I talk to guests away from the studio. So today I have a conversation with Will Forte, someone that I worked with as of my second year on Saturday Night Live. And one of the really cool things that happened was Fred Armisen wandered in about halfway through our interview, and the three of us got to sit there. And afterwards, we were saying, in all our time working together, which was over a decade, we never really sat down and had a chance to just talk about it without interruption. So it was a really special conversation for all of us, and we hope you enjoy listening to it. Hey, everybody. I'm here with one of my dearest friends, one of my oldest friends, Will Forte. Hi, buddy.
Hi.
I'm so happy you're here.
It's good to be here.
We met, I think, in 2003 you started at SNL?
2002. But it was the fall of 2002, so it was very
gotcha.
Close
so
to
So I think it was my third season. That's why I am.
Your second season.
Was it really my second season?
Yeah.
You guys started that quickly after. Wow.
Yeah. Because I auditioned the same year as you.
Yeah.
And then for some reason, stupidly chose to, well, not stupidly, I was writing at the 70s show at the time, and I was just, I think really I was very nervous to do SNL, and to, I thought I would maybe blow it. So I just said like, oh, I think I'll stay at 70s show. But that was the year that I remember I would watch you and Poehler were starting.
Yep.
and Dean and Jeff Richards.
That's right. So I do want to go back, because I don't think people quite understand. You got offered the job and said no. For all we know, I would not have gotten the job had you said yes. We don't. I might have been the guy who...
That's very likely the case. So you do owe me big time.
No, but I think that it's very hard for people to, even though obviously writing for that 70s show is a really good job and there's no downside to having that job, very few people say no to SNL.
Yeah, and I back in the time, I think there were a lot of people who thought it was a real like punk rock decision, but it was really more than anything are we allowed to swear on this?
Yeah.
My pants decision. Like,
right.
Like it was really based out of fear,
mm-hmm.
The fear that I, because I had written at Letterman about 4 or 5 years earlier, and that was one of my dream jobs. Like Letterman and SNL were two of my main influences, and I kind of the bet at Letterman. Yeah, I just wasn't very good at it, and then I thought, oh my God, do I also want to go blow up this other dream of going to SNL? And so my response to that was to just say, oh no, I'm not going to do it. But then I realized over that year, oh, well, that's so dumb, because why not at least take the, you won't ever get to, I don't know. It was really
Did you
dumb.
Have a lot of regret over the course of that year?
I did, because I had told myself, I'm going to, back then there was no YouTube or anything like
right.
that. So I said like, oh, I'll make some short films and do this. And I just played video games the entire year. It was a real waste of time. And then thank God they came back and asked if I would reconsider. So.
And you, I've heard this, you were almost courted by Lorne in a way that he put more effort into hiring you.
And I should say that this is all based on the power move of you having said no. You then had a thing that Lorne never sees in people, which is you were hard to get.
Yes, and I think, but I wouldn't say, I mean, it definitely was not a power move.
No, of course not.
Intentional power move. So his courting of me was relaxed and just perfect. He really is such a smart person, knows exactly what he's doing, and was very gentle with me. And I don't know. I look back now and it just took me the amount of time to get my head in the right place to say yes. And then even the next year, I was terrified of it. But it's like, you know, making yourself jump out of an airplane, you know, with a parachute on.
You and Fred started together. And I want to ask about your pants, because from my perspective of having been there a year and then you guys showed up, both of you had very, and obviously you developed tons of other stuff once you started working there, but you had things that you had done at the Groundlings and you had sort of fully formed ideas that I feel over the course of your first year, you had an excellent first year because there were new things you were writing, but you also came with stuff. Did that help? Did you feel like you were shitting your pants less or more than you thought once you started?
It definitely helped to have all this stuff that was battle tested at the Groundlings Theater. It's so interesting you mentioned Fred because, you know, well, I'll always feel such a connection to him because we did come together that first season. We started in the fall of 2002. And he was so different than me, though, in that he was so excited to get up on stage and not afraid at all. Do you remember him?
He
just could, like, the summer came and he couldn't wait for those shows to start up again in the fall, and I would always just want the summer to last forever because I was, the first four seasons, I was terrified.
Can you look back now and say, I also was doing great work over those first four seasons. I just didn't have a perspective on it.
Well, there are definitely things that I was sticking to my game plan of, like, I'm not going to write anything that I think to get on air. I'm just going to try to keep with my weird little stuff. So the only times that it would be kind of weird would be if somebody would write something that I didn't love and you have to be in. It takes a while to get used to that. And also, I don't think I wasn't good at that. Like, I feel like, well, this leads into another part of the story. At the end of the third season, there was this big shake 'em up, and a lot of people were kind of put on hold.
Yes.
There's a point in the summer where they are supposed to tell you if you're being picked up for the next season. And sometimes they'll put people on hold and say, okay, we want another 3 weeks to decide if you're coming back. And they did that to a lot of people. And I was one of those people they did that to. And then at the end of that 3 weeks, they said they had still not made a decision about me. And they had me wait for another 3 weeks, essentially, where every couple of days they'd say, we still haven't decided. And I was the very last person they hadn't decided on, which was tough. And they finally brought me back. But Lorne had said, look, you really commit to the stuff that you write, but you still have kind of a writer's mind when it comes to things that other people write and you perform in, and you need to own those things. And in my head, I was like, oh, friggin' dumbass, you don't know what you're saying, you know. No, I don't do that. And it was totally right. Like, I would in my head be thinking about the times that I had written stuff at 70's Show or at, you know, all the, you know, I don't want to go over my credits, but it's an extensive list of shows.
You've mentioned one.
Okay, fine. Letterman, Third Rock from the Sun, Action, the Jenny McCarthy sketch show on MTV. Did I mention Letterman?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. Letterman, and then there was Letterman.
Right.
The Army Show. A bunch of the movie awards. I mean, it was a really cool, people really thought of me as a very cool writer.
But you were saying that as a writer, you remembered.
You would write stuff for people, and a lot of times you would just have this a way that it should go in your head, and then I would remember the disappointment sometimes when somebody would deliver it in a different way, or you would know that there was a funnier way to say something. And in my head, as I would do other people's sketches, I would just be thinking, oh, they're not happy with how I'm doing it. And I'd be in my head about it, and then it would make me sometimes pull back on something instead of just fully going for it. And Lorne was, you know, again, another example of him just being a very smart sagacious. See, that throws you off because it's the word is sage, but then sagacious, you hit the hard G with sagacious. And yeah, and it just totally, that really helped me to just have a real attitude for that fourth season because it felt like it was all gravy because I almost got fired.
It's so funny because I feel like that can break multiple ways. I went through that, I believe, my second summer. And the reality of we're going to put you on a three-week hold isn't we're going to sit around and talk about you for another 3 weeks. I mean, what you know to be true is we're going to look and we're going to see if we find someone we like more than you. So it's not even about you making a case for yourself. You just have to sit there and, you know, wait for them to exhaust the efforts to...
It's so scary. Oh, my God. That just reminded me. I remember during that period of time was when Andy, who I knew, had known a little bit before he came to
Andy
SNL.
Samberg, you guys write at the Movie Awards? Is that how you met?
I don't think that I wrote at the Movie Awards. I think Solomon wrote at the Movie Awards with them. So, and I had met them through UTA and I think Matt Rice, but just had seen them. And they were so such friendly guys. So I had run to them a couple times and we had become not as good of friends as we are now, obviously. But like we were friends back then. So he was putting together a packet and I was kind of helping him. Just like, oh, yeah, oh, that's great, and this, and, you know, I don't think I really was much help, but it was interesting helping a person out, at least in a even small way, who might be taking your place.
Sure.
So that was, and so thank God he came, and I got asked back, too.
That was, I always think of that summer and that hiring as a real turning point for the show. That began.
Oh, yeah.
What I was, at least for iTime there, those like golden years, because that was, the whole Lonely Island came on.
Yeah.
And Sudeikis had just started, I think, a couple shows into the last season.
Yep.
And Hader and Wig came only a couple shows later. And and then Jost and Brian Tucker. So it was a really, it was an incredible group of people to come in at once.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with you there.
One of my favorites of yours that I watch, somebody asked me the other day, well, I do a Q&A with the audience every night, and they say, it was a podcast. I was getting interviewed, and someone said, what's something that you wish you had written? If the world could be rewritten and you were the writer of it, what would it be? And I said, based on the things I rewatch, it would be probably MacGruber. Like, I would love to tell people, like, no, that was my idea. I came up with MacGruber, and I wrote all of them. But another one that, because at least I can conceive of, like if you gave me the beginning of that idea and be like, I don't know, I would never come up with it. I guess what I'm saying is there's a structure to it that I really appreciate. Whereas Clancy T and Jackie Snad, I love so much. And I could never, I still to this day don't conceive of how you guys came up with it.
That's so funny because somebody just two nights ago was saying, because I people don't bring that up a lot, that one. And somebody the other night was saying, just out of the blue, said, Clancy T. Baccarat, how did you guys come up with those four things?
Right. So for those, for the uninitiated, try to go on YouTube. Harder to find than you would like, I will say, on YouTube. Clancy T. Baccarat, Jackie Snad were country singers.
Yeah, it's me and Kristen Wiig as Jackie Snad.
And they, all their songs had the same four elements.
Yes. Spaceships, Model T cars, toddlers, and jars of beer.
Yeah.
What the hell are jars of beer?
So answer the question that you were asked last night. Why? How'd you come up with those four?
I don't remember. I remember the first time we put it up, we somehow were using those four elements. I think we were just going to write a bunch of crazy songs. And the first one included those four elements. And we were like, we started writing the second one and we just used, you know, probably jars of beer in there. And we're like, this is the thing. We just keep doing it. But it was existing songs. So it was like, I remembered, the one that I always remember is, Highway to the Toddler Zone. Gonna take a ride on a spaceship to the toddler zone. And then just I'm going to drink a jar of beer in the spaceship on the ride to the town. Something like that. And then it would have been, because they have to pay for all that stuff. So they said, like, okay, you're trying to introduce 12 songs,
right?
Popular songs that we have to clear and pay for. So they nixed it. And then we just did our own songs for the next one. But yeah, I don't remember how they came up, but it was something like that.
I remember sometimes it would work hugely in your favor because you had a very unique voice. And I think there were, I don't want to call certain SNL hosts square, but they maybe did not have a taste for your style of comedy. And so there would be times where you would write something at the table that would potentially crush or would have crushed, not potentially. And then it wouldn't get picked because I think in the room the host would just sort of say, like, it's just not, I don't really get it.
Yeah.
Whereas then I think the longer you're at the show, because I remember one of those was Jonah and another one was Seth Rogen. They were the hosts.
Yeah.
And they really had very little to do except tee up the songs. But they were such huge fans of it that it was when you walked into the room to pick the show, it was like the first thing they wanted to do.
Yeah. I think Jonah was the one who did the first one. He's a great, I mean, obviously, I'm not divulging any secret when I say that he's a fantastic comedian and a big fan of comedy. He's awesome. So it was great. The other person I'm very thankful to, and this is a totally different sketch, was, you know how hard I tried to get that Spelling Bee sketch on.
Yeah.
And I had done that maybe 70 times at the Groundlings. And it's a scary sketch, I understand, for Lauren to put on because it's, if people don't like it, they don't like it for 5 minutes or 4 minutes or something like that.
What's the word in Spelling Bee?
Business.
Business. Again.
So for people who don't know, I do this sketch where I'm just a really bad speller and I'm in a spelling bee and I'm asked to spell the word business and I spell it for like 2.5 minutes long.
Well, there's also a full 2 minutes of you trying to kill time before you keep asking questions.
Oh, yes.
About like using it in a sentence origin.
So it's really, and that, but that's another, I totally understand there's not much for a host to do.
There's nothing
in that
for a
sketch.
Host to do. Right.
Yeah. So they just have to really want me to have a nice sketch in the show.
Yeah.
And finally, Jack Black, I put it up 5 times, which is pretty unheard of. You get a real frown from people after you put up something more than twice.
Yes.
But I just kept putting it up. And Jack Black, we had that idea to end it with a Tenacious D song. And he was so wonderful to push that one through. So I was really excited to get to do that.
You said, and it's accurate, that to over resubmit a sketch is slightly frowned upon.
Yeah.
I would say in my era there, no one did it more than you.
I believe in my sketches.
You do.
I believe in them.
And I don't, this is one of the things I love about you. You do have a genuine belief in what you have. You're very rarely wrong, it should be noted. If it finally made the show on the fourth or fifth time, it tended to work.
Every once in a while, here was my problem, was that you would get to a point where, like, early on in your time at the show, you would hear from people, from producers at the show, you'd put up something at the table read, it would get some laughs, and they would go, you know what, that's, at some point, you put in your time at the show, those will go your way.
Yes.
But early on, you just got to put in your time, and sometimes there are sketches that might get laughs at the table read, but they're maybe not going to do them because they think they might just be room laughs instead of a laugh that might, you know, might, because there's comedy writers write at different stuff than a mainstream audience will laugh at.
Yes, and a comedy writer is more likely to laugh at stuff that's new to them.
Yes.
That would be jarring to an audience.
Right.
Yeah.
So my main thing was, years later, when I'm in my sixth or seventh year at the show, and there would be something that would get laughs at the table read and then not get picked, I wasn't saying, oh, this is guaranteed to work on the show. I was just saying, it seems fair to me, based on what I have always heard over my time at this show, that I should at least get the shot to do it at a dress rehearsal show.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. No. And I think the other argument for doing it later in your time there is, the longer you're on the show, the more the audience starts lining up with the people at the table read, who,
yes,
we knew you first, and so we were the first ones to laugh at something for being a forte sketch. And then eventually, I think by the end of your time of the show, the audience was also, when a sketch started and they saw you in it, they had a different expectation for it. They sort of, I think, attuned in to your radio
station.
They knew
to go to the refrigerator at that moment. No, I still had a pretty low percentage of hits.
I don't think that's true at all. We, you know, one of our first, it was the first Second Chance Theater. And I should know we're coming up on 5 years on the show, and we've only done it 3 times.
Are you serious?
Isn't that weird? And they're harder to come up because they have to be good.
Wait, is tonight going to be the...
Tonight's 4.
Is number 4. So it was, I know it was Benjamin Franklin. It is a huge honor to have been able to be the first Second Chance Theater.
Benjamin Franklin was the absolute crystallization of what Second Chance Theater was supposed to be and who it was supposed to be for. Like that kind of sketch. Like big swings that are fun to watch.
Then Sudeikis's Juggler.
Juggling Class, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Wanna Come With, the Sandberg sketch Wanna Come With.
I never saw that.
Yeah,
oh,
real good.
Oh, my God. I definitely remember that.
Yeah.
In watching that at the table read. And he did get to bring that to the dress rehearsal, right?
Yeah, I think Wanna Come With came to dress rehearsal.
Was that Steve Martin? Who was that?
Maybe. Oh, I had a... I saw... I don't know if you're in this sketch. I recently saw Steve Martin, and it was... You know, when someone like Steve Martin comes through and hosts SNL, for you, it's the biggest week ever,
yeah,
right? To spend a week with Steve Martin. Yeah. But you assume for him, it's just another week of being Steve Martin.
Yeah.
And he actually had a specific memory of Lorne making him do that. Remember the scene where he was a surfer?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he was
Which
like,
I freaking loved.
Freaking loved. He did not want to do it. And then... He wanted to do a sketch with Poehler, and he both remembered the sketch that Lorne talked him into and the one that he wanted to do, and talked about how bad it went at air. And I was just so, it made me so...
Oh, wait, the surfer one did make it to air?
It aired and died. And it was really made me so happy that Steve Martin, I was like, oh, you're still Steve Martin, and you, 10, probably 12 years after that, he's like, you know what? Lorne was wrong.
Oh, that is... He's my hero.
I know. I'm going to have to, we're going to see Yorma tonight, and I have to remember to burn him with that story, because I'm pretty sure he wrote
that. Do you remember, what was the Poehler sketch?
They were two drunk people trying to get a loan, and it was, I think it was probably from Hader as a bank loan officer, and it was very clear they just had run out of money at a bar, and were trying to get a loan.
I will say, it is a burn on Yorma and those guys, but I will also say that I thought that sketch got robbed. I always loved that sketch. I thought Steve Martin was so funny in that sketch.
Yeah.
And
it's
I just was
going around to
surprised.
A bunch of surfers.
Yeah.
Oh, it's basically he's an old guy in
a surf
group, and they want to kick somebody out of the group. And it's him going around and just saying everybody's name over and over again.
Hey, Mad Dog. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Mad Dog, was it you?
That's right.
Was it you, Goofer? Tell me it wasn't you, Snake. And just literally saying everybody's name.
Just
like five
realizing
times.
Right now that it's just another version of "Wanna Come With."
they made poor comedy legend Steve Martin do a "Wanna Come With."
Oh, those guys make me laugh so much.
They're the best.
So funny.
It was so much fun. One of the things I talk about our years that I think was the great education of working there, especially with people like you, was not watching the process of an idea become really strong on the show, but watching all the really great failures. You know that when you watch your favorite people at the table just miss, like, wildly, it teaches you, like, oh, yeah, there's no way to ever solve comedy. Like, you just get better and better at it, but it's so much fun to watch, you know. My last sketch I ever wrote at Dress, my last show, it was the last show in Dress for the Melissa McCarthy show, and it like played to silence, and I was under the bleachers with Lorne, and it was this really awkward thing of, you know, the whole week had been, you know, we're going to miss you so much. And then it was just like laid a stink bomb as my parting gift.
God, that is so funny. You're right, though. I mean, but it also is those... People are laying stink bombs because they're also a lot of times trying to find these new little frontiers, you know,
trying to do
new stuff that's not the same old that people have seen all the time.
Well, that's what I mean. You're like working in a lab where people are trying these new things, and most things don't work. And it's just so cool to be around, like to even watch how the mind comes up with an idea to like fail in a new way is more interesting than people who, you know, reach some sort of writing that's almost algorithmically programmed to work.
Yeah. Wait, so what was your last year at SNL?
It was a weird February. I came back and did 10 shows, I think. I left the show and then 3 weeks later started this show.
Started working on it or started hosting it?
Started hosting it.
Oh, my God.
It was so dumb.
That's bonkers.
I found out I got late night basically the last week of the season.
Okay.
And it happened really fast. And there was no, the week before I was hosting late night, it never occurred to me that I'd ever do it.
Yeah.
And ended up being Jason's, Fred's, and Bill's last show.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't in any way emotionally prepared to have it be my last show. And so I said to Lauren, I want to come back and do the first half of the season. But looking back, with that said, everything we came up with in that 3 weeks, none of it worked. And so if we'd had 6 months, we would have just come up with 6 months worth of stuff that hadn't worked. You just have to do these shows to figure them
How
out.
How long had you been doing this show before you felt like you can't feel comfortable right away,
no.
Right? It must be terrifying.
It's awful,
I would imagine.
Yeah.
And then when did you start feeling relaxed and because now it
months.
Feels like it's, you have such a defined... I this show has such a personality to it, and it's really awesome.
I think that is, it's just finding out what you want the personality to be, because then it's at least, I'm not saying every show is good, but I do know every show we know what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And for the first year and a half, I don't think we knew that. Every night,
yeah,
we looked at it starting over. Tonight we'll try this and see if this is what the show is. Whereas now... Yeah. And it did. I mean, it took a year and a half, which was a huge burn because that's what Lauren told me it would take. And I was in my head. I had this real
fucker,
I think
is
6 months.
Right.
He's always right. He's always right, except the five times a year, he's wildly wrong.
There was, I don't know if you were ever, now I'm trying to remember the story. We have a very funky set of elevators in this building,
yeah,
which you know about. To go from the 17th floor, we were just talking about this before you came in, to go from the 17th floor down to this 8th floor, you have to take an elevator from the 17th floor to either the 16th, 15th, or 14th floor, and then switch over to the other side of the elevator bank and come down here.
Yeah.
So at some point, we were all going, you might have been in this group, we saw Lauren way down the hallway walking towards the elevators. We jumped into the elevator bank, went down, went to the other elevators, took it down to the 8th floor. The elevators had opened right away. Everything, there was no downtime. We opened the elevators on the 8th floor and Lauren is magically there or something. And we're just I shouldn't have said it because that blows the... Because we said, what did you do? And he just looked and said, I'm magic. And it was the coolest thing I've ever heard anybody say. He's just, so funny.
I want to talk about... I mean, I could talk about different characters of yours all day. Hamilton Whiteman was a... It was sort of a wonderful group scene. That was group written, and it was, the original one was Wedding Toasts.
Yep.
And it was you, I should say Kristen Wiig was sort of on an oxygen machine.
Yep.
I think Bobby Moynihan just sort of dropped the mic. There were different, it was a really, my favorite kind of SNL sketch is sometimes a thing where everybody is just kind of is responsible for a little corner of the sketch. Just come out, crush, leave. But that was the first time we saw the character Hamilton Whiteman, who is basically looks like Jim Jones and is a terrible...
Or Paul Williams. Paul Williams was the person we kept thinking.
But he's a... Paul Williams hair, Jim Jones sunglasses.
Yes.
And a real bad guy.
Yes.
Not without his charms, but definitely a very racist, bad... man.
Yeah. Misogynistic.
Misogynistic. No friend to the LGBTQ community.
He's no friend to any community.
No, I think that's very safe to say. No friend. You were actually very, I think, in front of the alt-right with this character. He's a perfect parody character for sadly a moment that's become all too real.
Yes, yes.
But I think I give you a week's warning, maybe? Not even that. But it occurred to me, and I asked you if you would give a wedding toast at my actual wedding at Hamilton. I don't think I gave you guys a lot of time.
I think it was more than a week.
Oh, good.
I think it was somewhere in like a week or 2 weeks. Oh my God, I have to mention it.
We talked
about you in the very beginning of this. Just through the curtain.
Yeah,
this is one, the only. Oh, and there's Mike Shoemaker out there. But Fred Armisen just
Fred
came
Armisen's
into here.
Here.
Fred Armisen is watching
Fred Armisen will just join this. I think he'll just join this podcast.
I am.
How are you?
How you doing, buddy? I am. I lost my voice is the only thing.
Why can we hear you then?
Ah.
He's got a point.
Hi, Fred. We were just talking about now I'm going to totally change subjects and then get back to it. Well, who are the brothers?
Kelly brothers.
The Kelly brothers.
Gunther and Patrick?
So the Kelly brothers, it was like we'd explain tax code law and stuff like that.
Yeah. But the setup would be that we wrote a song to make it simple how to understand. It's very, very complicated, and there are a lot of new provisions in there. But we have a song that would explain it, and then there would be this little plinky little piano song, and we would just do
no lyrics,
high voice.
You did the high voice, yeah.
I could never hit that. Let me see if I could. Yeah. I mean, it's not. It's way higher.
That was it. And I think it might have been our first year. Right?
Wait, was there piano involved? Maybe it was just a cappella.
Maybe it was a cappella.
No, I feel like Jeff Richmond was in there too.
Probably.
Oh, maybe not. I don't know.
But it was. Yeah, it was our first year.
I think so.
Yeah.
Do you guys remember? There is one time. I'm certain it might be the only time that the three of us wrote a sketch together. And I'm going to say this. It turned out to be a really good sketch.
And did you remember this?
Did it make it on the show?
It did.
The three of us?
The three of us wrote a sketch where we are in a life raft with Christopher Walken.
And?
Oh, I do remember that. Now, I forget what happened at all, but I definitely remember. Yeah.
And it was like the only time we wrote together. And I say this I hope you guys know this, we are huge fans of each other's work. I love you guys so much. We all write very differently. My takeaway, and even when it got on air, I just had a sense of it. That's, I'm so glad it's not going to happen again.
We have different styles.
But I write so swiftly and don't overthink stuff. Why wouldn't you want to be a part of that?
I think we have a similarity, me and Seth, that we both sort of hide away and squirrel away and do it sort of.
Yes.
Privately, like, let me just finish this sketch.
Well, I think that's true of all of us. Although,
I don't know. I feel like Will gets people involved. I'm going to check in and see how does this sound? What sounds better?
Well, but to a crazy extent. Like, I think it'll be a combo, though. I'll probably do that and do my first little draft or go with Solomon somewhere and do a draft.
Yeah.
And then, like, okay, but is this phrasing? This phrasing could be better and this could be, and then spend till 11 in the morning, you know, up all night. Oh, it's just crazy.
But I have such an appreciation. No one I've ever worked with cares more about how things sound or the phrasing than you do. And it sounds, by the time it gets on air, it's very natural. It doesn't feel overwritten, but you put a lot of work into it. And I think that's really.
That's why it gets so exciting toward the end of when you're there, when people at the show, like I'll always remember, like Jost coming in and doing that. One of my favorite sketches I ever got to do was the Jeff Montgomery sketch, the trick-or-treater who was the the sex offender.
Yes.
And he just, that whole thing was written, and it was like, I didn't have to drive myself crazy, and I still got this sketch that seemed like it was something I would have dreamed to have written from it, you know, would
a
wanted
perfect
to
sketch.
Have. Yeah, so it's like those things, you know, I was so thankful for anybody who would ever, you know, have me in mind to write something for me. And so, yeah.
I don't want to draw too much attention to the fact that multiple people made that choice, but do you remember I wrote a sketch
where
it was
multiple people would make that choice to cast me as a sex offender.
That's genuinely what I'm going.
Was the go-to sex offender.
Because I wrote a sketch about third-party candidates, and you were the NAMBLA chair. You were the NAMBLA party.
Yes.
And I just remember that your first thing was, it's not what you think it means. And then the moderator explained exactly what NAMBLA is, and you said, oh, that you do know.
It is.
Speaking of word choice, a thing I think about all the time, I cannot remember the sketch. You wrote a sketch where, for no reason, you pronounced both. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yes, and it's so funny because I forgot I did that, and I did that again at some point within the last year. I wrote that into a sketch, or I think it was at Last Man on Earth. I wrote somebody saying both a bunch.
Maybe that's why I thought about it again. Another, now that Fred's here, this was unplanned and a delight.
I love it. Oh, yeah. And I just want to add really quick, just that I was always, always in awe of your work ethic and everything that you wrote on SNL. I didn't make that clear because I sort of just sat down and just started blabbing. I just want to make sure that you know,
by the way,
that I was like, whenever you had something at the table, I knew it was going to be great.
Oh, my God.
No joke.
Thank you. The feeling is mutual. We talked all about how that connection, I don't hope you feel the same way, but I just will always feel such a connection to you because coming in together, and we split a dressing room for the first couple seasons, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, and I was always very envious of you because you seemed to be not nervous at all. And I was like, God, I want to get to that point. You you could tell up on stage how much fun you would always be having. So
is that true? Because that's how it looked from the outside. Did you feel any tightness in sketches?
I think maybe like the first year, you know, like anybody, you just don't know what's happening or who you are even. Like what? How do I fit into this? That, you know, everyone already had like their things that they were strongest at. You know, Jimmy was there, Rachel, everyone already had. So that said, I knew I was coming in at the bottom, just sort of, so I was happy to get any little, you know, elf part, you know, any little thing that was happening. But I felt, I just was, I'd gone through enough, like, with other stuff, with other work stuff, that the whole thing felt like icing on the cake.
Right. Another one of your things you guys did together at Update that has a special place in my heart because it was my wife, Alexi. The first time she came to the show was one of the Weekend Update Thursdays where you guys did Hall & Oates singing.
Oh, yeah.
And we were trying to write a sketch about how different candidates use different songs. And this was a sketch where Hall liked Obama, but Oates liked McCain. And so basically the course of the singing the song was you guys arguing about the two candidates.
Do you remember how it came about? I mean, you must remember. Do you remember how it came about that we started doing Hall & Oates?
No.
Oh, you don't know this.
We had written a Righteous Brothers. It was a thing where we were the Righteous Brothers.
At a corporate event. So we put people's names in the song.
Yeah, so we worked it into, I think.
You've Lost That Loving Feeling.
You
know, it's George Jones or whoever.
Yeah. It went well at the table read.
And we were going to do it for dress.
Got picked Wednesday night to go into the dress rehearsal show. We wake up Thursday morning and one of the Righteous Brothers had died.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
We had to rewrite the whole thing because he just died.
Yeah. And I mean, we felt awful. And then we were trying to figure out what to
Who
do.
Else?
And then we finally settled on Hall & Oates.
She's Gone.
Did we do She's Gone?
Yeah.
Because it's so funny because they also, didn't Hall & Oates also do You've Lost That Loving Feeling?
Probably. It seems like something that.
Yeah.
No, maybe I'm thinking of The Firm. Never mind. Well, I apologize to, you know, Righteous Brothers, because that's, I mean, obviously losing a cherished friend and member of the band is a big deal. And to us, it was, you know, we don't want to make it seem like it was like, oh, it was such a problem. I'm dying.
I think, you know, it was a problem. It was not at the same scale.
Yes. As what they were going through.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Yes. So I was talking, you were there. At my rehearsal dinner, when Will gave a toast.
Oh, yes.
As Hamilton.
Yes.
Because Will was asking me to email it to him because you wanted to show your girlfriend. And I was saying, I won't. Because I think without context, it's Will being incredibly inappropriate for a wedding toast.
Yeah.
And throughout it, as you'll see, it keeps cutting to Alexi and I. Cackling.
Yes. Yeah.
And I feel like for people who didn't have the surrounding context, it would seem off.
Okay.
Wildly,
okay. That
wildly
makes sense.
Off.
That yeah. does make
They'd have
sense.
To be familiar with the character. And
yeah.
I do remember before we did it, because John Solomon and I did that together.
John Solomon, your dear friend and
dear friend, longtime SNL writer. We're essentially writing partners. But he's, you know, he's, it, that's the thing, the true, you know, when people say like, oh, he makes everybody feel like their best friend, that's
he's
John
the
Solomon.
Best
so
person, yes.
It's also like he makes everybody feel like they're writing partners. So I go like, oh, he's my writing partner. And like 100 Everyone's people are like, he's my writing partner.
Yeah.
But we do, you know, we have known each other for years. So he's, I'm probably his longest time writing partner.
I agree.
But he has a bunch.
I consider you that.
But we, so we did that together. And we had so much fun doing it. And then we were
it
like...
It went so well.
We really went for it. And
yes.
Then I was like, do you want us to send it to you? Because it kind of goes over the edge a little bit at points.
Yes.
And I think you said, I don't want to see it. Just do whatever you're going to do.
Let it rip.
I think we might have run one term for you.
Yeah. There was...
The perfect...
Which one?
Oh, yeah.
Blank.
Was it the
perfect... It was referring to a part of Alexi's body.
Yes.
By the way, it's her favorite thing ever.
Oh, good.
It was also very
she's so wonderful.
Dramatically yeah. lit, I remember. Something happened where the lighting
yeah.
was like just
it was perfect.
Right. It did not even look like a wedding.
The video, the quality of that recording
yeah.
is like you're watching a documentary. I mean,
it's
could gorgeous. It could be a documentary.
The
now.
People, yeah, and I should say that we showed a small, basically the only part that is airable on television a few years ago when you were
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah.
And because of that, like every now, I'm like Lin-Manuel Miranda, last time he was here, he's like, please show me the Hamilton video. Like people like want to see it. And I
that
said,
is the coolest thing ever.
And I said, I would, but there's like six other people in this dressing room that I don't trust. So next time you come, if you bring no entourage.
You've got to kind of do it like a private viewing in a way.
Yeah.
Just show it to them.
I just, you just want to prep it.
Oh, my God. I would love to meet Lin-Manuel Miranda. So
yeah.
We'll
set it up that way.
Yeah, we'll do it. Hamiltons.
Did you read while you or did you memorize it?
It was on cards.
No, I always have them on cards.
And even the character did, right? Or no?
Yeah, I think the character, yeah.
Oh, it was
and
so good.
And then it went so well. Sandberg... asked you to do it at his
yeah he was getting
night.
Married two weeks later and he said yeah so that was tricky because like there was so much crossover between the two weddings that we had to just come up
yeah.
with fully new material.
I will say this, there's something about that night that I had a heist. Do you remember I had a high school friend who basically did a rap? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Oh, wait.
Was,
yeah.
Didn't they send like it as a video?
No, there was
like a lazy
there was
Sunday
a video.
Rap.
There was a film, but then another guy like rapped, one of my oldest high school friends. And it was that thing of, oh, I'm so, when it started, I was like, oh no, this is like, there's so many like professional comedians here. And he crushed. And I was just, I remember being like, God, like he was like my confident friend, like Greg Hendershon from high school. And I was like, God, all these years later, you're still super confident. And you just went up and crushed it at the rehearsal dinner. It was like made me super happy.
There's one, and I'm not even going to bring up the name, but I think we all know who I'm talking about. There was one pretty inappropriate moment that was like, okay. Let's
and it was,
on.
By the way, an inappropriate toast from a show business person.
Yes.
Yeah. I know people are like, oh, who was the weird uncle? There was a weird, bad toast.
Did he or she know how inappropriate it was?
I don't think while he or she was doing it, he or she knew. But I think based on feedback over the next two nights, it became clear to them that it was bad.
Seth.
Yeah.
Yes.
I had an idea.
Yeah.
And you were at Andy's wedding.
Yeah.
I was unable to go.
Yes.
Well, the thing that I wanted to do at that one was I wanted to call out that person's toast and repeat the same story again saying that it was inappropriate but to tell the whole story again
about me
about you and I and I really wanted to do it but
this is such a burn on anybody listening to this podcast.
Yeah,
like, this is like when you go out to dinner with two friends and they talk about
their it'll be
elementary
fun
school
for people
teachers.
To try to solve it.
Yeah.
This is one of those unsolved mysteries.
They'll never solve it.
No, I think that's safe
she.
To say.
Yeah. He or she or it.
And,
yeah. Okay, it was Lauren.
It was Lauren.
No, it was not Lauren. It was not Lauren.
I love you guys.
Seth, I love you.
Love
it's going to be
too.
A lot of fun tonight. This is really delightful. We're going to get dinner tonight.
Yeah. We're getting dinner.
We're going to see a lot of old friends. This is, I mean, I will say, the one miscalculation I made that breaks my heart all the time is I just, you know, my whole life, and I think it's true of you guys as well, my whole life was SNL for like 12 years. And I put no time into cultivating relationships outside the show. But it didn't matter because I thought, oh, well, that'll just be the people I'll hang out with the rest of my life. And then so many of you moved to Los Angeles and I don't see you anywhere near as much. So when you come back for a night like this, like it is a desperate scramble to get as many people together as possible. So I'm very much looking forward.
I love it. I'm so excited about it. Because it's the same thing. I have so many dear friends who live here who I don't get a chance to see enough. So this will be really fun.
All right, guys. I love you. I'll see you both tonight.
Love you, too. See you soon.
Love you. And also, please listen to this podcast.
Oh, man, it's a little late.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night Podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.